So I love that story. At one level, I mean, it's just so ordinary. It's just, why have they even got it in there? But then, there are other pieces of it that are just wonderful. So, starts out, they meet and they break bread together, which is what they do. And the breaking of bread is mentioned twice in this short passage. Probably the first time is a love feast, or maybe even kind of more like our potluck supper. So the first time they're eating. You remember, or you may not remember. Anyway, Paul had issues with how folks observed the Lord's Supper, and that was something that needed to be corrected. The problem was that there were folks who would come, and they had it originally. The whole of the Lord's Supper was it was a meal. It was a meal. But the problem they had was that some people would come and bring a lot of stuff for their family. They would sit down, just their family or their little group, and eat it. Meanwhile, there were other people there who perhaps had not eaten all day and were hungry. It appears that by the time this happens in Acts, that they've moved beyond that. And in fact, everybody is sharing. So that first time, they are sharing together. And then the second time that the breaking of bread is mentioned, that's probably would correspond to communion. In other words, in a worship context, Paul breaks bread with them, which makes sense. This is his last night with them, and so it's a special time. Paul is talking with them. Now, we don't know what he's talking about. Last Sunday, began in Judaism the new reading of the Torah. In other words, in synagogue, they read a passage from the Torah, and they go through the whole of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy in the course of a year. Just by the way, if you divide that up by the number of Saturdays, a lot of reading. Not like what we do. It's long. But I think they started over, and there is a tradition, and I'm thinking it's connected with that night, of staying up all night and talking about Torah. And that may have been what was happening. I don't know. In any case, they're staying up, they're having a discussion. Paul is talking. And there's a young man sitting in the window, and he falls asleep. Now, as I imagine it, probably the folks around have told him repeatedly that he ought not to sit in the window. I'm just guessing. They probably said repeatedly, "You need to get off of that. Did you know you could fall?" "I'm not going to fall. I'm right? Right? Kid thing. I'm not going to fall. No, nothing's going to happen to me. It'll be fine." Boom! And long way down, but he survives. Paul runs down. We don't know whether he survives and kind of gets knocked out, or somehow he stays asleep. Who knows? But Paul runs down, picks him up, and says the life is still in him, and everybody's happy, and they go back. And of course, okay, and this is the part of the story that I like the very best. Is that Paul just launches back into whatever he's doing. I mean, it's like the guy falls out the window, crashes down, they run down, they get him, they come back, and he's like, okay, where was I? And he talks till dawn, completely undeterred. I mean, you would think that after that little while, he would say to himself, hey, maybe this sermon is a little long. But no, he just keeps going. One of the stories of our tradition as a church. See the clock back there? When I arrived in East Greenwich, back at the beginning, at the dawn of time, when I arrived in East Greenwich at the old church, there was no clock in the back. And I like having a clock because I like to know what time it is and what's going on and so forth. All right. But there was no clock. And the reason there was no clock is that there was a time when Ross Lilly, many years ago, Ross Lilly was preaching. True story. So Ross is preaching, and he's gone by. He's just gone by. I mean, it's late, and you know, and so Bob Cogan, who was ushering that day, the late Bob Cogan, Bob goes over, stands under the clock, right? And eventually he can tell Ross has looked down, and he goes and he sits down. But of course Ross is undeterred. You know, he's got a sermon or whatever he's going to do, and he just keeps going. Bob Cogan goes back. All right, so this happens like three times. And then Bob gives up, and eventually Ross stops, and life goes on. But that Monday, Ross comes in, tells the sexton, get that out of here. And that was the end of the clock. Until I arrived. So I always... Paul... would have enjoyed perhaps seeing it, but only to measure the passage of time, not because it would in any way influence what he was doing. So, what do we make of this? Well, you know, at the simplest level, it's about staying awake, and it's about staying awake. For me, it speaks to us about staying awake in a number of different ways, and I want to talk to you a little bit, just a little bit about that. You've heard the expression, be woke and stay woke. It comes from Black Lives Matter. And it's about being awake to social and racial injustice. Being awake and staying awake to that. And it is something, quite honestly, which we all need to hear. Last weekend, the African Methodist Episcopal Church was here, and on Friday night, retired Reverend he's an elder, Reverend Eddie, was speaking, and he, like Paul, was undeterred by the time, by the way. But in the course of his sermon, it was about putting out into the deep. It was about taking chances. It was about moving out and doing what God has called us to do. And he used a bunch of examples. But at one point, he went through a listing of folks who had been instrumental in the African Methodist Episcopal Church in the foundation and building of that church. Now, the AME broke off from the Methodist Church in the late 1700s, St. George's Church in Philadelphia. There was a group of African Americans who were there. I believe they were freed slaves. And they were sitting in the congregation. And an usher came and told them they could not sit in the congregation. They needed to sit in the balcony. And Richard Allen led people out and across the street, where they then formed a new denomination, the AME. Well, I knew about Richard Allen, but Reverend Eddie ticked off a list of people. And at each name, everybody in the group, everybody knew who this was, great leader in the AME. I didn't know a single one. I didn't know any of them. And it's not like I didn't at least theoretically study this stuff, right? But none of those names stuck for me. And I thought, how impoverished is my understanding of that? I mean, this is a sister denomination. These folks are related to us, for crying out loud, you know? And it's a blank. And it's not like I haven't studied a lot of stuff, but it was just gone. One of the great things about the internet, okay, and I can't say that without saying, oh my goodness, there's so much junk on the internet. But one of the great things is that there are people who will remind us from time to time of important issues. And one of the things, one of the reminders that I've seen recently, even though it's slightly out of time, out of sequence, is about the Tulsa race riots of 1921. Until I saw it recently within the last couple of years, I had no idea what the Tulsa race riots were. Well, it was a time when a white mob attacked the black people of Tulsa, destroyed the homes of 10,000 people, and not only attacked on the ground, they had private aircraft. 1921, there was a lot of other stuff, but they had private aircraft dropping bombs on folks. Now, as soon as you say the Tulsa race riots, people assume, right, that the folks doing the rioting were black. I mean, when I said that, isn't that what you thought? That's what I thought if I hear that, right? No. No, it was white people doing it. We need to be, and that's such a small thing, right? We need to be woke, and we need to stay woke. One year ago today was the shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue. One of those things that basically, for so many of us, I think, I'm guessing, passes in and out of our consciousness. You know, it's there, and then it's gone. We don't live that on a regular basis. We live, pretty much white, middle class, cisgender, right? That's us. And we don't live with those kinds of risks, and we don't see it. But we are challenged, I believe, to be woke and to stay woke. So the earliest use of that woke term is probably Lead Belly in a song written in 1938 about the Scottsboro boys falsely accused of rape in Scottsboro, Alabama, not Arizona, Alabama. But to be awake is such a biblical idea, right? Goes back, I mean, we used the psalm this morning, but it's also it's a New Testament thing as well. And on Maundy Thursday, when we read through the narrative of Jesus, the Last Supper and the Garden of Gethsemane, in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus calls to the disciples and asks them to stay awake. Could you not stay awake with me? Could you not stay awake with me 1 hour? He asks. And it happens, I think, 3 times. Goes away, they fall asleep, he comes back, he wakes them up. Could you not stay awake with me? And it's such a poignant piece. To stay awake with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Dietrich Bonhoeffer talked about that when he was in prison. Bonhoeffer in prison for his part in a plot to assassinate Hitler. Talked about what it means to have faith, what it means to be a Christian, as he said, to live fully in this world. And he said it consists of staying awake with Christ in Gethsemane, being awake to the suffering of the world. Henry David Thoreau in Walden said, wrote a sentence that I love. Morning is when I am awake and there is a dawn in me. He said it's not about the clocks, it's not about time, it's not about even the rising of the sun it's when there's a dawn in me, when I am awake to the world. And he said that moral reform requires first that we be awake, that we be awake to the world around us, that we take in what it is that's there. But there's more than moral reform, and there's more than being awake to the issues and problems of the world. At a more basic level, to be awake to the mystery and the wonder of life. I'm amazed at how easy it is to miss stuff and how wonderful it is just to pay attention. So Phil's sitting there with his granddaughter, and she turned around to look back and see Gay, who was sitting near the door. Right. And so the little tiny person turns around. Is that, I mean, there are moments like that in our congregation just all the time. And I would have to say, I find that so incredibly wonderful. Years ago, I would be distracted by stuff, and there were things that would annoy me. I hated children's programs, number one. I hated the children's story, even more if I had to do it. I hated kids crying in church. I didn't particularly care for baptisms. I was, you know, so in my 20s, I was a cranky old man. It's like, what is up with that? And I find myself looking at it so differently over the years. And just when we were in Manchester, Becky Harris had three little boys who were, they were very active little boys. Not easy to control. And so Becky would always be late for church. Always, always, always late for church, you know. And she came and apologized, and I said, I love that, Becky. You know, we've got lots of people there. And then I look back, and it was the same kind of thing I could see at the back. And I think, oh, that's great. You know, they're here. It's so nice to see these folks. And it is. I mean, it is a wonder when life comes alive to us in different ways. You know, I grew up on Cape Cod, and I would have said that I was not unaware of the world around me, or that I didn't enjoy nature. I did. I mean, I can remember thinking about the clouds and the ocean. I mean, if you grow up near the ocean, we are so blessed. Well, I've told you before, people would ask me, do you live near the ocean? No, I don't. I was half a mile away. That was not near the ocean. That was, you know, near the ocean was when you could see it and smell it and be right there. On the Gay and Phil Dion theme, they took us for a ride in their lobster boat on Friday. Totally awesome. We haven't been on Narragansett Bay this time in Rhode Island. Back to the point, which is this. I would have said that I was a pretty observant person, but in truth, when I looked at birds, some of you have heard this before, but when I looked at birds, I saw blue jays, I knew what they were. I knew what chickadees were. I knew what robins were. I knew crows. And I knew seagulls, as I would have called them, right? When I met Elaine, which is when I married Elaine, but when I met/married Elaine, she taught me about a whole bunch of birds that I had never seen. And it's so amazing to realize, okay, they've been there all along, you know? The warblers and different kinds of finches and the fact that there are, what, three or four different kinds of seagulls. They're not just seagulls. You know, there's a whole bunch of kinds of seagulls that you can identify And, well, anyway. And I thought, how did this happen? What was I looking at? You know, it was the same sky, it was the same trees, it was the same, you know, the birds were always there, I never saw them. So to be awake to the wonder of what's around us, partly it's that nature thing, but also it's just noticing human beings, just noticing what people are doing. And to be grateful for what we see. Life is never long enough. It's always hard. But there are so many amazing things along the way. And there are so many ways in which we are blessed just with amazing and incredible gifts. I have never been a fan of Halloween, in spite of Randy's jacket. I've never been. I totally love that jacket. But I've never been a fan of Halloween until a few years ago, when I saw something written by Steve Garness Holmes. Steve Garness Holmes is a colleague, serves the Acton, the St. Matthew's United Methodist Church in Acton. And he said, Halloween, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, okay, he said, Halloween is the most Christian of holidays. He said, people come to the door uninvited, and they're strange and sometimes weird and scary, and nevertheless we smile and welcome them and give them candy. And he said, isn't that the way life should be? You know, I mean, shouldn't we kind of go through life, all of life, as if we were opening the front door to these strange people, but always greeting them warmly with treats. Let's be in a spirit of prayer. Gracious God, we give you thanks for the gifts of life. Help us to stay awake. To stay awake to the injustice and the hurt and the pain. To work to make the world a better place. But to stay awake as well to wonder and beauty and the gifts of your good creation.